you've been arrested unjustly. Where do you go if someone's taken your children unfairly? Where do you go to seek justice? We must keep this station alive. Yeah. Alive. WBAI.
No justice.
This is listener-sponsored, locally controlled WBAI New York.
It's Pacifica Bylaws time.
Aren't Pacifica Bylaws boring? Just a whole lot of words. Words. Words.
Directors you've never heard of from places you don't know, chosen by people who are suing us in court. People from nowhere.
They know our bylaws are really bad. They snuck into court to change them. They built a fancy website to make their changes look good. They're going to make Pacifica great again. Their bylaws mean they'll be running the show without you. And you can give your money to them and hope they keep the shows you listen to on the air. Or maybe they decide to sell your station. But they haven't taken away your voice yet. Send a message to the people from nowhere. Vote yes for them to run your station without you. Or, to keep your voice at your own local station board, vote no. It's still up to you.
This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. The previous program was Advocating for Justice with Arthur Schwartz, heard Mondays at 5 p.m. It's 1 minute past 6 p.m. Stay tuned for the WBAI Evening News presented by The Independent coming up.
Good evening. In the news tonight, New York City has become one of the last major cities in the country to shut down its public schools in response to the coronavirus pandemic. Spain and France have become the latest European countries to put their population under total lockdown. And the Federal Reserve's attempt over the weekend to calm the financial markets backfired spectacularly today. I'm John Tarleton, editor-in-chief of The Independent, and this is some of the news for Monday, March 16th. Governments across the United States and around the world are dramatically stepping up efforts to curtail the spread of a novel coronavirus that has already taken more than 7,100 lives worldwide. Here in New York City, where more than 400 cases of coronavirus have been confirmed, Mayor Bill de Blasio finally capitulated on Sunday and ordered the closing of the nation's largest school district, which serves 1.1 million students. The school closings will last until at least April 20. De Blasio's decision was forced in part by growing threats from New York City teachers to engage in mass sick-out today if the schools remained open. Eight New Yorkers have died from the coronavirus since Friday. The mayor has vowed to keep school spaces open to serve children of healthcare workers who would otherwise have to stay home with them. Remote digital learning for other public school students is slated to begin next Monday, March 23rd, according to de Blasio. For children who depend on school meals, they will be made available daily in every public school from 7:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Mayor de Blasio has also ordered the closing of New York City's entertainment venues, bars, and restaurants, except for food pickup and delivery, effective Tuesday at 9 p.m. The governors of New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut have also issued identical statewide edicts shutting down these kinds of venues, again, except for food pickup and delivery, and forbidding public gatherings of 50 or more people. This comes on the heels of an advisory from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention that called for the gathering of more than 50 people to cease over the next 8 weeks. This includes conferences, festivals, parades, concerts, sporting events, weddings, and other types of assemblies. Meanwhile, Governor Andrew Cuomo is calling on the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to turn SUNY campus dormitories into emergency hospitals for the expected wave of victims of COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus, while de Blasio is calling on key medical supply companies to be nationalized and put on a wartime footing with 24-hour-per-day production. Cuomo also called Sunday for state legislators to, quote, do their job and report for work this week at the state capitol as lawmakers look to reach an agreement on the annual state budget, which will likely include funding to address the coronavirus pandemic. We'll talk more about the state of New York's coronavirus response later in the show with Brooklyn State Senator Julia Salazar. The coronavirus also continues to spread rapidly in Europe. In Italy, 368 more people died on Sunday, while the country remains on a national lockdown. More than 2,100 Italians have died in the pandemic, and the nation's hospitals and medical personnel have been overwhelmed by tens of thousands of more COVID-19 cases. Italian doctors are now being forced to choose which patients receive ventilators and which will go without and die. Seeking to avoid Italy's fate, the national governments of Spain and France have both put their countries under total lockdown, with residents only allowed to leave their homes for exceptional reasons. The coronavirus death toll has already hit 342 in Spain and more than 140 in France. Meanwhile, President Trump's hastily improvised European travel ban has gone into effect. The new policy was announced last Wednesday in a nationally televised address from the Oval Office. On Sunday, social media was filled with photos of U.S. airports jam-packed with returning Americans who reported on social media waiting hours to be processed with no hand sanitizer or other basic medical supplies made available to them. In other news, the House of Representatives passed a $50 billion emergency aid package Friday night that was hammered out in negotiations between House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin. The aid package provides funds for ramping up coronavirus testing, but the paid sick leave coverage it provides only covers 20% of the workforce. Companies with 500 or more employees, which makes up 54% of the workforce, were exempted, as were companies with fewer than 50 employees. The Republican-controlled Senate is currently weighing its own emergency plan. Two Republican senators, Mitt Romney of Utah and Tom Cotton of Arkansas, said Monday that House plan does not go far enough. Romney and Cotton called for the federal government to send a $1,000 per month check to every American to help soften the economic impact of the coronavirus pandemic and the severe recession that now seems inevitable. Speaking of a crashing economy, the Federal Reserve cut its benchmark interest rate to near zero over the weekend to reassure financial markets. However, this morning, financial markets around the world plummeted. Here in the U.S., the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 2,997 points today, or about 13% of its total value. The Dow has lost 31.7% of its value since it hit a record high on February 12th. The coronavirus dominated Sunday night's presidential debate between former Vice President Joe Biden and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. Both men denounced President Trump's handling of the coronavirus pandemic and called for more testing, more medical equipment, and greater emergency relief for workers harmed by the crisis. Sanders also renewed his call for a universal Medicare for All health care program to be implemented and for the pharmaceutical companies to be prohibited from profiteering off of a future coronavirus vaccine. Presidential primaries will be held in four more states tomorrow, Illinois, Ohio, Florida, and Arizona, amid concerns about the health risks posed by in-person voting for both voters and poll workers who tend to be older retirees. Over the weekend, Georgia and Louisiana both announced they would be pushing back upcoming primaries to May and June, respectively. More states are expected to follow suit in the coming days. You are listening to the WBAI Evening News presented by The Independent. We will be back with more after this break. That was some of the people of Italy who are singing and playing music from their balconies amid a nationwide lockdown due to the coronavirus pandemic. You can find these videos on YouTube. You're listening to the WBAI Evening News presented by The Independent, New York City's progressive newspaper, now in its 20th year of publishing. I'm John Tarleton, the Indy's editor-in-chief. We continue our coronavirus coverage tonight with a New York focus. In our first segment, we take a look at the biggest local news of the past 24 hours, the decision by New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio to close the nation's largest public school system with 1.1 million students spread across 1,800 schools. De Blasio resisted calls all last week to shut down the schools, even as other big city mayors across the country took the same action. Over the weekend, the movement of rank-and-file educators, a dissident left-wing caucus in the teachers' union, decided to step up the pressure on the mayor by calling for a mass sick-out by New York City's teachers. By late Sunday afternoon, de Blasio reversed course and announced he would shut down the schools beginning today. To talk more about the New York City school shutdown, we are joined this evening by Aisha Rodriguez, a ESL teacher and steering committee member of the Movement of Rank and File Educators, which is a caucus within the United Federation of Teachers. Aisha, welcome to the WBAI Evening News.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. So before we talk about the campaign y'all mounted to change the mayor's mind, can you elaborate on why you all felt it was necessary and urgent to close all the public schools in the city?
There is a moral imperative to take care of those who can't take care of themselves. We serve all children. Many of them are medically fragile. They have different types of disabilities, lung conditions, et cetera. Many of them are being raised by their grandparents or in foster care, living in shelters, living doubled up. These are kids who can't practice all the things that we're saying to practice to stay safe. They can't practice social distancing when they, you know, sleep in shifts or live doubled up or in different situations. Many of them are disabled students who really needed some type of respite care for the parents. All these things are needed, but at the same time, we realized that we couldn't control anything. Nothing was being cleaned. There was nothing happening to keep these kids safe. And when you go back to a parent who is disabled, we had four kids in my school alone whose parents said, we can't risk it. We can't risk it. One had MS, one is in a wheelchair. There was a moral imperative. We all were talking about it, but it bubbled up from the bottom when teachers were getting sick and nothing was being done, and the stories were coming to us. This is something that came from the grassroots. It came from people who were desperate for help and answers. And as our union was not moving fast enough, we felt like we had to take a stand, which is the whole purpose of having a social justice caucus is to make a stand.
Yes.
For social justice.
Absolutely. And Ed, can you describe in a little more detail how y'all went about organizing that pressure campaign that pushed the mayor and maybe pushed the union leadership to be more aggressive?
Technically, there were calls, there were emails, there were online ways of communicating. Usually when there's a problem with the UFT, they come to us. This happens often enough, and we give advice, we give support, and this started off from that. And eventually we got people to talk to each other and find out what the truth was happening in different schools such as Grace Dodge. People were doing things individually. And then they came to us. There were people in Stuyvesant writing op-eds and complaining, going to the city council. None of this started with us. We just decided that that's our role, to be the voice of the UFT members that weren't feeling heard or supported.
So it was more like you all were channeling or helping coordinate this energy that was bubbling up and gave it a little bit more focus and direction?
Well, yeah, that's what our goal is, to be the voice for the teachers. That's the purpose of having a caucus, where we actually give that voice out. You can't hear it otherwise. Everybody would be like, oh, let's wait another week. You know, and the reality is we're teachers. We have seen how fast Dorito dust on a kid's fingers goes.
Yes. Okay?
And if you just imagine how far Dorito dust goes, you can imagine what germs do.
Right. And now that the decision has been taken and the mayor has said the schools will be closed until at least April 20th, what would you
What would more, the movement of rank and file educators, like to see happen next?
Moore has been in touch with our parent allies. The parent allies want to address the subpopulations that have severe need, particularly students with special needs that really need care. We need to have some type of support. Like the whole idea of having the summer school program was to be, like Mark Traeger said, was to be able to have a model so that there will still be places where people can go. So we definitely need that. We need to address food. We need to address health care issues. We need to address all those other needs. But mainly we're concerned about pockets of people who are going to be forgotten. And there is a petition out by a parent who is on CEC5, I believe, who's been saying, hey, give them money through SNAP benefits for parents to stock their own fridge instead of making us go out to get a grab-and-go lunch, making us go out in desperation to find whatever we need. It doesn't make sense to say you need to quarantine yourself, but then come out for a grab-and-go. And there's some parents who have young babies, you know, who have older parents in the family. It makes more sense for it to be directly distributed to those who are already vetted for that need so that they can independently stock what they need, as opposed to here's a funky peanut butter sandwich and some green beans and, you know, or some random food that they give the kids and they're supposed to be grateful. Let the parents exercise independence. We want that to happen. We want clarity on testing. We want clarity on graduation for the kids, for the Regents exams. We want clarity on the new young teachers who are coming into the system and have to take the TPA and haven't finished all of these things for their certification. We want all those answers because we stand to lose some great new teachers. We stand to have a lot of parents, you know, being worried and stressed out at the wrong time because they're not getting support. And not every kid has a laptop, you know, and it would be nice if New York State would pass some laws and fully fund all of our schools. I believe Robert Jackson has a bill asking
right.
for that to happen.
Right. So many needs to be met. We need to wrap up in about 30 seconds here with this segment. Is there any last thing you want to share with us?
The concern about teachers who are being asked to come in this week, and they're still immunocompromised, they still have heart conditions, they still have all those things, being asked to come in to learn how to teach remotely instead of learning how to do something remotely by home. We need that freedom to be able to have our older teachers, our veteran teachers safe. So we have another petition up to talk about that, about being forced to come in when the CDC is making recommendations that we're not following. So we want to follow the science. That's what we're asking for. Follow the science and obey what we're being told so that we can be all safe.
Okay. Aisha Rodriguez, ESL teacher and steering committee member from the Movement of Rank and File Educators. Thank you for joining us tonight on WBAI Evening News. This is a story we will definitely continue to follow. It's a massive undertaking here.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you so much. All right. We will be back with more coronavirus coverage after the break when we will be joined by Brooklyn State Senator Julia Salazar to talk about how the state of New York is responding to the crisis. That was more of the people of Italy who are singing and playing music from their balconies amid a nationwide lockdown due to the coronavirus pandemic. You are listening to the WBAI Evening News presented by The Independent, New York City's progressive newspaper, now in its 20th year of publishing. I'm John Tarleton, the Indy's editor-in-chief. In our second segment tonight, we look at the role of the state of New York in addressing the coronavirus pandemic. Joining us tonight is State Senator Julia Salazar, whose district encompasses the North Brooklyn neighborhoods of Greenspoint, Williamsburg, Bushwick, and Cypress Hills in 2018. Salazar became the youngest woman ever elected to the New York State Senate and the first self-declared socialist elected to the legislature in almost 100 years. She played a leading role last year along with other progressive first-term state senators in helping move Albany to the left and winning a number of key legislative battles, including victories for tenants' rights and bail reform. And, well, now we're in a new legislative session that has been turned upside down by the coronavirus pandemic. Senator Salazar, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much for having me, John.
You bet. We've heard frequently from Governor Cuomo in the past week or more. First of all, I'd like to get your sense of how you feel the governor and the state are responding to this crisis, and if there's additional things you would like to see happening.
Yeah, I'm encouraged to see the governor communicating so frequently with the public about the crisis, multiple times a day, communicating, you know, frequently and frequently with the news media to make sure that the message is getting out on every platform possible to every New Yorker that we can possibly reach. The governor just sent out an email less than an hour ago to notify people, you know, with a bulleted list of really essential updates for businesses, for consumers, things that everybody should know specifically about COVID-19. And so I'm glad that has been the case. I'm a little bit less encouraged and impressed with the state's response overall, meaning that the legislature has not convened since last week, that we my understanding is that unless we receive an executive order from the governor, we will not be able to convene remotely. So there's this, you know, dilemma in which the state Senate and the state assembly can only assemble in person if we're going to make some really critical decisions, including passing any legislation, including passing and negotiating the state budget, which is eminently due. And the governor has stated publicly that he wants to pass the state budget as soon as this week. And so time is really of essence. And I'm not thrilled as a state legislator that I'm in Albany and been called up to Albany along with all of my colleagues, and then was informed just this afternoon that we would not be meeting and that we wouldn't be in session today. So I'm less thrilled about that. And I think that the next steps, in addition to keeping the public informed, is absolutely critical. And I do recognize the work that the executive has done on that, and that many of my colleagues and myself, we've been doing as well. What's really important is that in light of the state budget process, we consider the severe economic needs and the, you know, likely economic crisis that we will be facing as a direct result of this public health crisis.
Yes. And a couple of topics I want to check in on. Your thoughts on the protections that should be provided for tenants, both here in the city and across the state, who might face eviction if they lose their job or are otherwise in distress. What should the state of New York be doing to help and protect tenants?
Absolutely. Well, the majority of New Yorkers and the majority of Americans, many of the New Yorkers who rent in New York State are already being affected if they work hourly jobs, if they don't have any paid sick leave, you know, for a variety of reasons, people are really being negatively impacted and are already struggling. So it's really important that we have an eviction moratorium. A few days ago, I joined several of my colleagues in the state Senate in a public letter demanding an eviction moratorium. We wanted to see the moratorium in effect for at least the duration of the state of emergency. What the initial response was from the courts was an eviction moratorium lasting a week. We know that that's woefully insufficient. And so what I want to see and what I'm calling for is an indefinite moratorium on evictions, at the very least, and for the extent of the state of emergency. But additionally, as many people have, the problem that many people have raised is that mortgage rates are actually fluctuating since the coronavirus crisis was declared a pandemic. We've seen a spike in mortgage rates. We've also seen a decline, quite a decline some days. And so it's difficult to predict how this will impact homeowners, especially those who were already struggling to, make payments, or they were behind or facing foreclosure. And so I am also demanding that we see a moratorium on mortgage payments from lenders. That they shouldn't be demanding that homeowners who are struggling continue to make their mortgage payments, especially because some of those homeowners have tenants, and we don't want to see this domino
right.
effect when we could be, intervening in a meaningful way and making sure that the people who, whether we're facing a coronavirus crisis or not, that the very wealthy, the owning class, if you will, that they are just continuing to profit and live in complete comfort while the rest of society is struggling because of this.
Right. We can't have that. And we'll have to wrap it up here shortly. But one last question. The budget negotiations are supposed to be happening this week, or the deadline is the end of the month, and budget negotiations are notoriously opaque in Albany, and the three people in a room. And one of the great victories from last year was bail reform, and that has been heavily targeted by police unions, prosecutors, and others, and that it might, a rollback of that reform seems to be in the works for this year's grab bag budget extravaganza. Is there any chance at this point of stopping that or limiting what will happen? Because with a coronavirus pandemic, the last thing we need is to be putting more people in jail, especially people who are facing minor charges or really no serious threat to society.
Absolutely. The bail reforms that last year were absolutely essential. I personally feel and have stated that wealth-based detention is completely unjustifiable. There's no reason that we should have cash bail, and simultaneously, in the process of eliminating cash bail, we should not be expanding the net of pretrial detention. People who are legally presumed innocent should not be in jail before trial, especially during a public health crisis.
Okay.
And so I think it's really urgent that I don't support any rollback to bail reform. And I do think that there's a chance that given the circumstances that we're in and the very passionate and reasonable calls for us to limit the number of people who are being incarcerated, that we won't see rollbacks to bail reform, but it's really hard for me to say for sure.
All righty. We'll have to leave it there. State Senator Julia Salazar, thank you for joining us tonight on the WBAI Evening News presented by The Independent. All righty. So that's tonight's show. I'm John Tarleton, the Indy's editor-in-chief. For more of The Independent's coronavirus coverage online, go to independent.org, independent.org. We are planning to have a print issue come out at the beginning of April. That's contingent on some factors out of our control, of course. But in the meantime, you can follow us online, again, at independent.org, INDYPENDENT.org. Thank you for joining us tonight, and enjoy more of the music from Italy.